Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio once again, Julie Este. So Julie Este, who is associated with the organization called MEA, the Matanuska Electrical Association, which is a co-op. And welcome, Julie.
Thank you. It's always great to be here.
And describe your position in exact terms. What are you called?
I am called the Director of External Affairs, which means I, one, I'm focused on member communication and outreach, also member services, the folks that answer the phone and answer your questions there, making sure that everybody's taken care of. And then I also handle things kind of beyond the service territory, some of the rail belt cooperative efforts that are going on right now, making sure that our legislators are informed about what's going on. So it's a little bit of everything.
Wow, that's a big responsibility. Since we have just come off last week, a meeting here, an event in the Valley with REAP, which is a group of associated kinds of organizations that are involved in working on issues associated with alternative energy, renewable energy, and energy in general. One of the things that I took from that was a discussion, a description, if you will, of what might be happening in the near future, where the producers and distributors of electric power will work together to improve a situation which has been, to this point, only a little bit worked together. Is that correct?
Yes. If you look at the rail belt, which really extends from Homer to Fairbanks, there are six electrical cooperatives, which when Alaska was just forming, these small towns and communities formed their own co-op. And of course, they grew and grew and grew. And now, instead of just serving our own service territory, we are starting to look around and say, how can we work together to better serve the entire rail belt? So as you mentioned, there are efforts going forward right now and then more planned for better coordinating our energy, and that will save everybody money. Let me give you an example. MEA built a few years ago a power plant different from anybody else's. We have 10 small engines, and that helps meet our residential load, which peaks early and then goes down and then peaks at night and then goes down. Those 10 engines help us follow that load. As the next little bit of load goes up, we can turn on another engine. The engines also run kind of at max efficiency through a big part of their cycle. So even if we're only asking them to produce, say, 7 megawatts of energy, they're almost as efficient as when we're asking them to produce 15 megawatts of energy. They're 17 megawatt engines. So they've got this pretty wide efficiency curve. Now, our neighbors, MLMP, just built another power plant. They have these huge engines, and they are most efficient when they're maxed out. Okay. So if they only want part of their power, they're paying more for that power. But if they can max out that engine, if they can run it at full capacity, it's going to cost less to produce that power because it's burning less gas, sure, basically, for every megawatt you want. So if we can send our gas to MLMP's plant and fill up their capacity, they're going to make more money because their costs are going to be less. And they're also going to make a little money from our revenue. We're going to save money because it's going to cost us less to run on their super high efficiency engines. But then what happens when, so we split the savings is how that works. And so our members save a little, their ratepayers save a little, and it works out. Now, what happens if we go another 10 megawatts? Well, it doesn't make sense for them to start a big engine.
Right.
Because that would be running really inefficiently. It would cost them a lot to produce that power. So they can buy that 10 megawatts from us. And we are experts at the small increments of power. So then they send their gas to us. We produce those 10 megawatts. We get a little bit of extra revenue from that. They get savings. We split the difference.
So does that happen now?
So right now it's happening on an informal market. So it's called a loose power pool. And all of these are terms that have snuck their way in from the lower 48, okay, different models that are working down there that we're looking to see if they work. So a loose power pool means that it's just voluntary. There's no contractual obligation to do this. We just say, hey, we've got this, we or MLMP will say, we've got this small increment to sell. Do you want it? And we'll say yes. And Golden Valley, on the other hand, will say, hey, we want this much power and we can sell to them. So it's this loose market of transactions happening. The next step for that is called a tight power pool. And that is contractually binding those transactions so that you're always using the next most efficient generator to serve the next increment of load. It's called economic dispatch, merit order economic dispatch. And that's what we're moving forward to with MLMP and Chugach and MEA are all working towards this tight power pool. We've signed an agreement to work towards it. We'll probably be filing something with the RCA on it in January. And that will, again, contractually obligate these transactions so that it's not just voluntary anymore. Because as we all know, variables change, different boards come and go, general managers come and go. Right now, we're at a very conciliatory, constructive time in the rail belt. And so we're trying to put some of those parameters in place to make sure that this cooperation and the savings that it's bringing can go longer term.
I would also guess that this would make planning easier when you're planning your budgets and all the rest of it. If you have
Absolutely.
That in place and you're committed to it over a lengthy period of time, rather than wondering whether, well, as it's voluntary, maybe something else would pop up.
Right. And when you look at it, I mean, MEA and our board, we're very beholden to our members. And that is the board's fiduciary responsibility is to our membership. So we don't want to do anything that, say, will benefit other folks, but may harm our members. But with these parameters in place and the merit order dispatch, everybody wins. And it also helps with long-term planning on generation. One of the things that's in place in the tight power pool is that we will be planning our new generation together. So in 10 or 15 years, if either something needs to be if we need to take one engine out of service and do another power plant, we'll be working together on those decisions okay. instead of separately, which I think will also help with that cohesion and help to ensure that we're building only what we need on the rail belt.
So you've made application, or the group, the various entities are talking about this, making application. Is there something the legislature has to do?
This is all within current statute and within the authority of the RCA currently.
Okay.
So I think there's things that the legislature could decide to do if, say, we weren't doing this voluntarily. They could legislate us to do this. They could legislate all kinds of things within the statutes that they have regarding cooperatives and electricity and utilities. But we're doing it voluntarily, so there's no real need for that unless they just want to put it in statute.
Okay.
To keep
okay.
it going. But they've got some other things to focus
well,
on.
Well, yeah, they're working on some other. Yeah. Well, that's good. You're taking
priorities.
This off their plate. So, so one of the other things that seems to be of interest to cooperative members, people living in the area served, is the thing about using solar panels, for example, on an individual's home. I've noticed more and more. Groups are out there working to, well, entrepreneurs have sprung up saying, we will install your solar panels for you and work with MEA to make that happen. I have had solar panels now for, I think it's almost 4 years. What should a person do if they're interested in having solar panels on their home in terms of working with MEA, and how has MEA come along since I approached you about putting panels on some years ago?
Right. The program that you're referring to is called net metering, and it's actually written into Alaska statute. That's something that the legislature did put into statute
okay.
that allows any member of really any electric cooperative in the state to produce up to 25 kW of their own power. And they can use it for themselves, or if they're using more than their household might use, then it gets sold back to MEA for our avoided cost of making that same electricity. So if you are interested, there's a lot of different options. It's not just for solar. People can do wind. Some of the most successful systems have both, but solar is a really nice entry into it because
sure.
It is not as expensive as wind. It's a little bit more predictable. Even though we have a lot of wind here in the valley, those smaller wind turbines have a hard time operating with really high winds. And so even though you think, oh, I have all this wind, I'm going to get all this power, a lot of times at those really high wind speeds, those wind turbines have to shut down. So solar has been increasingly more and more what we see, especially as prices from solar come down. I think the first thing you'd want to do is talk to somebody who knows about what they're doing. Go get an expert. There's lots of different installers. You can do your own research. But there's experts here that can come and do an assessment of your particular location and the best way to optimize that. Understand what you're looking for. Are you trying to make a bunch of money or are you just trying to offset your own power? They can understand and then build, and how much do you want to invest? And then they can build the right system for you. When MEA comes in is after you've done that work, you connect in with us, and we've got one engineer, which is awesome now. That's a new change from when you went through. There is one person that all of these requests get sent to. His name is Thomas, and he has a real big interest in this and also now has that expertise of working with folks. He can tell you exactly what he needs to see, and usually the fastest the way to speed yourself through the system is to have all of the right paperwork in place, and that includes the engineering one-line diagram. They need to understand a little bit about the location and a drawing. We need to understand your information about your electrical system, like your pole number and meter number, things like that. So the more you can have that complete to Thomas, he'll take a look-see, and then he goes and does a visual inspection once it's built and make sure that what you're building isn't going to negatively impact the MEA system or your neighbors, that you're not putting some crazy contraption on that is going to decrease the power quality or impact the system. And then you get a little plate and you get signed up for the program. You also get a meter. It used to be 2 meters. Now we can do it all with 1 meter with a couple different registers. And it measures what you use, energy coming in from the system to your house, and then also what you put back onto the system. And then at the very end of the month, it nets it out. And if you put more on the system than you've used, then you get a credit. And if you use more, then you have a bill, but it's usually a lot smaller. And I was just talking to Thomas actually at the REAP event. He was telling me that last year was a record for the number of net metering folks we had. Because when I started back in 2014, we had about 40 people on. And it had been around for a couple years, but it was kind of leveling out. In the last couple years, we almost doubled that. And then now we've added another. So last year we had 24 people and we're already there this year. And I know he was saying
new
net metering members. Yes. Okay. So we're now over 100. And again, that growth has really been hitting in the last little bit. And most of that is solar, which is exciting.
Okay. So my understanding also about how this works is that when the sun is shining and the panels on my house are generating power, if I have something turned on in the house, the power from those panels goes directly to that use. And then if I generate power and I don't have anything turned on or generating more, that's when it flows out into the grid to be measured and then marked up. So we have an avoided cost in different sense than sometimes you've used. So I'm not buying electricity to run something in the house when that's working. So that's a savings. And then talk a little bit about what happens when the power goes into the grid and is measured there.
Yeah, so it's interesting because our meter doesn't see, your power will follow the path of least resistance and it will go to your home before it comes out into the grid. Our meter only measures what's coming out and going in. It's not measuring how much you're using in your house.
Right.
So we don't know. So we can't look at our records and say, oh, this is how much your system is producing. That's something that you need on your side of the meter.
We have that.
Yep.
Right.
And so as soon as that power isn't being used by your house, it comes onto the grid and is measured. And so that means that what's being measured is not the total that's being produced, but it is the total beyond what you're using.
Yeah, the spillover into the
Yep. Grid. So then that comes into our system and it goes to the next home that needs to use it.
Right.
And so then you get compensated for the avoided cost. And avoided cost in MEA terms means it's the cost that we then don't have to pay to produce that power.
Sure.
Now, you're not getting the full retail rate back because there still is the lines, the clearing, the meter, the billing, the customer service rep, Thomas's time, Amy, everything that it takes to use that system and to put power onto that system is being covered in the other costs that you have, but you are getting paid back the avoided cost. So when you put more power onto the system, our generators have to produce less. And so there's an avoided cost calculation that the RCA looks at yearly and ticks and ties and makes sure that we're either not paying you too much or too little.
Okay, that's determined by the RCA.
It's determined by our financial team and submitted to the RCA annually for review.
Does that, in a rough sense, how much is that compared to the charge for if I'm buying electricity from MEA?
Well, it's the avoided cost is similar to the COPA element on your bill, that cost of power. Mm-hmm. There's a line item, and that's basically the fuel and any sort of O&M operations and maintenance ties into there a little bit. And so it includes fuel and operations and maintenance. It's a portion of your bill, and I don't know what percentage exactly, but it's definitely less than. So the best bang for your buck is offsetting power in your home because that's at full retail rate.
So we run certain electricity hungry devices on sunny days when it's producing.
That's smart.
Yeah. That's the way to do it.
And then the other thing that you can do is batteries, and batteries are expensive.
Sure.
But you can store power.
Right.
Instead of sending it back to the grid. And then you can use it in the dark. And some people choose to add that extra expense and not send as much to the grid, but then they get to offset more.
Sure.
So, you know, that cost benefit.
You have to figure that out.
Yep.
Make that decision.
And that's where somebody, a professional, can come in and really help you with that.
So the bill is then reduced. In terms of payments, credits for the person who has solar panels, how is that done on a monthly basis and annual basis?
It's done on a monthly basis, and it's done not by the credit of the kilowatt hours, but it's by the monetary credit.
Okay.
So if you need this much electricity and you've sold back this much electricity and what you've sold back is more than what you've needed from us, you get a monetary credit for that. And then that credit just it can keep going.
Right. And
that's actually written into statute. That monetary credit part is part of the statute that.
So do you have a choice of having it come off your bill or be paid at the end of the year?
You can request a refund at any time, but what it does is it acts as any credit if somebody paid more than they would.
Sure.
And so then it usually will get just used the next bill if you pay more. But if you're accruing, then you can ask for a check at any time, really.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's good. So does MEA have any plans to have its own large solar panel generating capacity?
You know, it's interesting because that's really a big conversation everywhere, but really I'm hearing a lot about it on the rail belt nowadays. Sure. It was brought up by one of our board members. Hey, let's start looking at this. This could be interesting. I know Chugach Electric is about to launch a program. Golden Valley is looking into a program as well. And there's lots of different ways that we can do this. But what the studies that we've heard from Chugach and Golden Valley is that currently the solar energy will cost more than the thermal energy that you produce at the power plant. And so there's different ways of handling that extra cost. Golden Valley is going to just add it, from my understanding, going to add it to their generation mix, and everybody's just going to pay a little premium on their bill for it.
I get that.
Chugach is doing a little different in that they're going to ask for subscribers. So if solar energy is important for you, you're going to pay a premium cost for being part of it. And then that money, then that ownership stake just gets taken off your bill. And so there's lots of different models to look at. And we're going to start by surveying our membership. Is this something you're interested in? And if so, are you willing to pay more for it?
Okay.
And so that's where MEA is going to start. We're doing a survey in November, December timeframe. And so based on that knowledge, our board's going to continue the conversation.
Well, very good. Because I've noticed as I've traveled place to place, not only in sunny California and places, other places where there are all kinds of wind generators and solar panels, but even in New England, most recently, I saw in the state of Vermont a large number of very large solar farms. On every southern-facing hillside, there'd be 1,000 panels, one sort or the other. And I'm thinking, okay, this is interesting.
Yeah.
This is an interesting phenomenon. And you've nicely described a couple of the issues associated with all of this, or ways in which you can go and make this work. And of course, what we're also talking about is a question of whether this would help in the event that you have a spike in the cost of fuel.
Absolutely. Then all of a sudden, the economics change a little bit. And it's a hedge, really. Renewable energy is a complete hedge. Right now, it's a little bit more expensive, sometimes a lot more expensive, depending on where you are. But as fuel prices continue to rise, there at some point, you're betting on that this is going to be this will be a lot cheaper. And understanding that with any what they call variable power, so power that kind of moves when you can't predict it, you have to run a certain amount of currently, you have to run a certain amount of thermal generation. So gas, natural gas powered engine to follow those variations. So you're not completely offsetting fossil fuels, but you're reducing it, and that's a great start. And so with those variations, because Alaska's got such a small grid, we have struggled putting large amounts of renewable or figuring out how to monitor those variable amounts of power. We're struggling with Eva Creek up at Golden Valley. They're having a hard time following that wind with their generators. Maybe we can help with our new engines. Fire Island Phase 2, they're trying to figure out how to better match that. And in some cases, you can balance those variations with other renewable power. Say we all share in this hydro project down near Homer called the Bradley Lake Project. And so Chugach utilizes some of that, almost like a big battery to draw. And so there's creative solutions, and batteries have made a big difference, at least up at Golden Valley. But again, those are expensive. And so we're trying to really balance how to maintain power quality, hedge our bets on some of the increased costs of gas, especially in the Cook Inlet. Right now, there is one solid producer of gas. There's gas out there, but it's not all behind pipe. And there's one person that really owns a lot of it. And so that's a vulnerability for us.
Sure.
And we need to be planning ahead and being strategic.
So what about variable pricing, for example, pushing people to use power during certain times of the day, et cetera?
Yeah, it's called time of use rates.
Right.
They're very popular down in the lower 48. What it does is it helps you shave peaks. And so when power peaks up, it's generally more expensive because you're running sometimes less efficiently. The way it used to work for us with Chugach Electric is once we got above a certain peak, we had to pay more for that power. So shaving those peaks was really important. It meant cost savings for the rest of the membership. And so we did a few time of use pilot projects in that time to try to shave those peaks. None of them took off. And, you know, at the time, it was maybe before its time. We weren't talking about that. Now with our new power plant, those peaks are less costly to us. So if we implemented rates, there would be there's no economic benefit for the rest of the membership. So to give somebody a discounted rate for using power at night would basically just be a subsidy instead of because there's no economic benefit. So then the rest of the folks that weren't part of that program would be paying more for that person to get cheaper rates. And so right now, it doesn't make sense for MEA, but that doesn't mean it won't in the future. Or if we're trying to, say, not build that next power plant as our area starts to grow, maybe we can start working on shaving those peaks instead of incurring the expense of a new power plant. So it's definitely potentially an option in the future, but right now it doesn't make economic sense for the membership to give discounted rates.
Are there any other scenarios that you're looking at of change that you should talk about?
Well, I think you've got most of them. I mean, I think a lot of what Tony Izzo, our new general manager, is really looking at right now is how to do more with what we have. So bringing process efficiency, you saw the work, the opportunities that existed in our net metering program from a member-facing perspective. Right. We've started to work on those, but there's a lot more we can do. When folks want to bring power to their house, sometimes it takes up to 2 months before an engineer can even look at it. And so those kinds of things that, you know, seem small compared to some of these big hot topics of the day, but really make a difference to that member. Those are the things that we're spending a lot of time working on. How do we reduce that? How do we reduce call time? We just currently, over the last couple of years, reduced call time by 65%. That's a huge deal when you're just calling to pay your bill or asking a question. We're improving all of our online options because that's a way that folks want to go to now. We're improving our paperless options. You can go on right now onto our Smart Hub or even call up MEA and ask to not receive your paper bill. And then you have to be on the Smart Hub app, use the Smart Hub app, which I do. And not only can you pay your bill, but you can report an outage. So you don't need to call and get the busy signal when you have an outage. And you can see your usage. So I was able to see just exactly how much my chicken lamp was costing as soon as I plugged that in. It was amazing how much it skyrocketed. But you can see daily usage and how it changes. And, oh, my bill seems high. Well, go to see that usage and see, oh, yeah, wow, my dryer must use a lot because every Sunday when I do laundry,
get a peak.
It spikes. And so there's all kinds of information that you can have to start thinking about being smarter about power.
Okay. So when you have come in the past, one of the topics we talked about, and I haven't seen much in the media, was the line that runs through or around Wasilla.
Yeah.
Progress update. What's happening?
Well, we have a route selected as of November 2015. We were able to work a little bit more closely with the Planning Commission in City of Wasilla. We took a step back and did a lot more member engagement to say, hey, we have to have this line. Help us understand the best place to put it. And we'll tell you the associated costs with that. And sometimes they're a lot more and sometimes they're not that much more. Like undergrounding is cost prohibitive, but could we put it through a different location? And that's what we did. We found a location that was more palatable to the Planning Commission and Wasilla City folks. And so right now, we're in what they call right-of-way purchase and final design. So we're working with the property owners along that route and talking about, we buy easements. So it's not, we don't own the property. We have permission to put our facilities there and to have unencumbered access to it. So we're working right now through that. I think we're about 75% complete. And then based on that final, you know, sometimes you have a homeowner that's just not willing to sell, so maybe you have to go around them or and so that will then the final design comes in. That's when you know, okay, well, we were going to do a straight line through this big parcel, but now we've got to go around it. If you look at when we did the line across the flats, there's now that really big, huge transmission pole in front of the Providence Imaging.
Right.
And that wasn't planned. We wanted to go across this one property, but the property owner said, I'm not talking to you unless you're here with a $3 million offer. And we said, our members can't pay $3 million to go across this one little section. And so we went around, but there's a few extra costs associated with that. And now we've got that beautiful power pole right right there. So we're going to try and go with one route, but if we have to work around, then there's going to be some final design with that. Okay. So, and as we look at the economy and some of our other, as this has happened, I mean, this started before I even got there. This was in 2012, 2013. In that time, we've had exponential growth down in KGB, Meadow Lakes area. So now some of those capital projects are starting to be really important too. So we're balancing all of our capital budget and trying to figure out exactly once we have the final design and right-of-way purchase when that will start.
Okay. Well, thank you, Julie Este. in charge of external affairs for MEA, for coming in here to
Thanks for always inviting and having good conversations. It's always fun to be here.
We'll invite you back as we're looking forward to an update in the near future.
Great.
Have a good day.
Thanks. You too.